Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Merkel Media.
This was all circulating around the base that a giant had been killed, but no one was supposed to talk about it.
I saw 3 long bony fingers reach up underneath the door, curl up to grab it, and then disappear.
When he came over to me, dude, he slithered over to me.
And this giant comes out of the cave and they're all frozen. And he starts running and firing at this giant. Well, the giant moves. He's got a spear in one hand, and he's running really fast and spears Dan and holds him up like this. Somebody yells, shoot him in the face, shoot him in the face. They basically decapitate him.
Got closer. When he got about 15 yards away from me, I raised that 12 gauge and I blow his head off.
I feel something pulling at my leg. And I look over, and there are 2 small, gray entities pulling at me. And they're literally, I'm getting pulled off the bed.
I reached my hand into this bush, and I touch air. Couldn't breathe, and I couldn't move, because I know I'm seeing a monster.
Yeah.
Welcome to the show, everybody. You're listening to The Confessionals. I'm your host, Tony Merkel. Thanks for being here. If you have a crazy, wild experience you want to share with me on the show, go ahead and shoot me an email. My email address is theconfessionals@theconfessionalspodcast.com. That's theconfessionals@theconfessionalspodcast.com. Or go to the website, theconfessionalspodcast.com, hit the contact section, and you can reach me that way as well. Either way works for me, just get a hold of me. If you want to hear more shows on a weekly basis, go to theconfessionalspodcast.com, hit the join button, and become a member. Members get access to bonus shows every Thursday, plus the Tuesday shows ad-free, and every time we do an overtime segment, that is for members exclusive as well. So if you want that extra content, go to theconfessionalspodcast.com/join and become a member. Also, friends, prepare with theconfessionals.com. I highly encourage people to start pursuing sustainable living. Gardens are a great thing. I started doing gardening last year and I did an awful job at it. I think my crop yield was like 5, 10%. It was really bad, but you got to start somewhere. You got to start trying somewhere. And that is what I am doing. And in the process of that, listen, you need emergency supply of food. Imagine if something bad happened while I'm growing my garden. I only got 5% yield off of it. I'm starving. And that's why we make sure we have our shelves filled with preparedness food like preparewiththeconfessionals.com. If you're interested in making sure you guys have stocked shelves, go to preparewiththeconfessionals.com, get yourself emergency supply food and survival gear. All right, friends. Well, let me tell you something. I have a really bad voice today, so I apologize for that in advance. I am coming over a wicked cold, man. This cold kicked my butt, and I'm still ticking, but man, I am trying to catch my breath. I'm short on breath. I'm very foggy in my mind. I can't think straight, so bear with me, but I will say this. We have a great show planned for you today. We have Derek Olson coming on the show again. He was on for episode 472, Peru's Megalithic Cave of Mystery, where we talked about ancient architect and this megalithic structures. Well, we come back on today with Derek because we want to talk about this ancient technology that maybe went into the megalithic structures. I thought it was a great conversation talking about the return of megalithic technology. And I think that it's something that we should really highly consider because it's not something that is going to be a Stone Age technology. I think what we're talking about here is technology that is far superior than what we have today. And so the fact that it's returning means that we're going to be advancing in technology big time. It's a good conversation we had with Derek, and I hope you guys enjoy. So let's get to it right now. All right, today we got Derek Olson from Megalithic Marvels. Derek, what's going on, brother?
Hey, Tony. Great to be back with you. Excited about what we're going to cover in this episode for sure.
Yeah, man. Listen, I'm real excited about it because, before I get into that, I actually got to tell you, man, like you, the last time you were on the show, the people really, really enjoyed it. And it was the first time I think I've done a show focused on those topics, and I wasn't sure how people would perceive it, you know, because like there's tons of platforms out there for that kind of content, I guess, and I just was like, you know, people may not like it, and I put it out, and people they absolutely loved it. They were like, "We want more Derek Olson," you know. And so,
yeah, that's great to hear. I'm glad they were liking it and not hating it, man.
Yeah, man, they liked it a lot, and so I. You and I mean, I think last time we talked, we had talked about you coming back on again. And, you know, like it was one of those things where it's like, yeah, we should have you back on. And there's so many different topics to talk about. And then it was like, okay, I know what we got to talk about. Because recently Joe Rogan came out with a new show with Graham Hancock and Randall Carlson. And Graham is always great. And so is Randall. Together, it's awesome. And what I initially like contacted you about, and we can go this direction, any direction we want to go today. But I was really taken back by what Randall said about the ancient technology that's going to be getting released soon. And I know you've heard about this, right?
Yeah. No, that was bombshell news that kind of has sent reverberations through the alternative history world for sure. So I'm excited that we're going to get on this.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I, when I first heard him say that, I got scared for him. I got scared for him, and I got scared for the people who are coming out with this information. Because if anybody's right. Listening right now that doesn't know what we're talking about, essentially, Randall Carlson said in the next 3 months, there is going to be an information dump that's going to be centralized so nobody can claim ownership of it. And it's going to have information on how to to have new forms of technology that's far superior than anything we have. Is that right? That's exactly what he was basically saying, right?
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, Graham and Randall are talking with Joe about, you know, ancient history and Egypt, and it was cool. Like you're saying, Randall kind of goes off script for a moment, it seems like. And he basically says, I think we're close to rediscovering some of this lost technology from the prehistoric past. And you see Joe Rogan's like eyes light up and he's like, what kind of technologies are you talking about? And Randall's kind of like, well, it's like he hesitates. He says, I don't know if I should go into this. And Joe and Graham kind of pressure him. And yeah, like, so he goes on to say how he knows of people that he's in contact with that he's known for like the last 7 years that in secret are working on rediscovering some of these ancient technologies. And he talks about how they're going to open source them, like you said, so that they can't be suppressed. And yeah, the big tease was in about 3 months, they're going to release them. And so he continues to share how there's this laboratory in the Maldives.
What is that, by the way? Real quick, before you go any further, the Maldives. I heard them saying that. I have no idea what that is.
Yeah, or I think he said the Maldives. It's like an island chain somewhere in the world. I'm blanking on where it is exactly myself.
Okay.
But it's kind of a ritzy area. And so there's some laboratory where these researchers are building these prototypes, which Randall says are using some of the same technological principles that Nikola Tesla discovered, that are based on implosion versus explosion. And Tesla famously said that if you want to understand the secrets of the universe, you have to think in terms of energy, frequency, and vibration. And so Randall is saying that's exactly what they're doing with this technology. And in this video clip, you guys can go find on YouTube. It's it's on Joe Rogan's channel. It's one of his recent videos. So Randall kind of has this computer screen, and he's showing a picture of like Tesla's famous planetary power plant that was made in 1900. And he says that they're working on a generator, these people he's talking about, that's very similar to what Tesla was using with that, where it's all based on geometry, vibration, and resonant frequencies. There's no moving parts inside this thing. And so it was pretty crazy. It got people excited. And like, I thought the exact same thing you did. Like, I hope you've got a nice security detail at your house, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly what I was thinking about. Because when they were talking about, I just go back to the history of Tesla and all the things that, you know, could have been if there was an act of suppression on his research, not just from, you know, governmental, but also other scientists that just were envious of him and tried to actively discredit him. Imagine if he would have had the support he had back then, how far along we would be with our technology, because they say that that Tesla had technology that's in our cell phones today. Like he was so superior and far advanced, and that alone. So I might go all over the place today, and just bear with me. But this is me thinking things out loud. Like, you're probably the first person I've talked to about this. So the fact that Tesla had this technology, and then we know that actually Donald Trump's uncle, who was an MIT professor, John Trump, he actually went in and confiscated, or actually didn't confiscate, the FBI did, but he analyzed all the information that was in the archives of Tesla. I talked to a guy that was an engineer for the military back in the 60s. And he said back in the 60s, they had technology that he was working on back then that we have now access to today. So if they had Tesla's studies and research and they took it for themselves, I'm starting to really get on the side that maybe not all, but a big majority of history's UFO sightings are coming from our own government and the fact that they had access to technology that they just didn't make public. And it, when you look at the evolution of what people are seeing in the skies, when they first started talking about this stuff, it was cigar shapes. But one of the things was the bell. It looked like a bell, and Nazis were working on the Deglocka, which was a bell-shaped looking UFO. And so I'm getting more and more convinced that we as modern humans have secretly access to this technology that only certain people, government organizations had and stuff. And if this is going to get released open source to everybody, I think that there's a lot of people invested in not allowing that. They ventured into the idea of like oil companies and, you know, big corporations not wanting that information out today. But like, even governmental, I mean, if you open source this stuff, and say our government has a lot of this technology already and they keep it under wraps. If that gets open sourced and all of a sudden China, Russia, Iran, all these other countries have access to that information as well, that's a big problem for them. And so when I heard him say that, I was just like, man, this could get juicy, dark, and weird.
Right. And it's, you know, if you ever see something in the sky, for example, like you referenced, that could be, you know, maybe black budget technologies that the mainstream doesn't have, I mean, you know, there's something to it. I was in Alaska back in 2016. Flying from Fairbanks to Anchorage on a red-eye flight. So it's about midnight, perfectly clear skies. I could see the northern lights. And I'm a guy, I'm an explorer. I'm always looking out the window. And I was just taking this in. And I'm thinking, man, I saw a bright star off I was sitting right outside the wing, you know, above the wing. And I'm thinking, that isn't it? That must be a massive planet. Next thing I know, this thing goes at the speed of light, straight up, straight down, and then levels back off where it was, like anti-gravity technology. And I almost had a heart attack on the plane. It was a pretty empty flight and almost everybody was sleeping. I'm looking around like, is anybody else watching this? And I realized this was a craft that was, it was shadowing our plane. This thing followed us for an hour all the way into Anchorage. And as we descended, it peeled back off away. And every once in a while, it would do an anti-gravity maneuver. And my mind was blown. Like, I am seeing something. You know, whether this is a UFO or, again, my guess is it was some kind of governmental black budget technology. It was mind-blowing to see for sure.
Absolutely. Now, with that experience, though, do you feel like that if everybody was asleep on the plane and it seems like it was shadowing the plane, did you ever get a sense that maybe this thing knew you were watching and it was doing it for you? And you don't have to say yes. I'm just asking because I've heard people say such things, and you know, it's at least you got a light show out of it.
That's an intriguing question. I've never thought of that. I never thought of that, but that's very interesting to think about. I know it was so real to me. Number one, like I said, I was looking around trying to see if anyone else was watching this. No one was. But I made a point to, I was going to ask the pilot about it, you know, because they're usually standing there as you deboard. Well, he never came out. He was locked in the cabin or the cockpit. So I was bummed about that, but it was very real. I was very awake. And, I guess at least I can say I saw a UAP, right? But have you ever heard about Coral Castle down in Florida?
No, I haven't.
So this is kind of an amazing modern day technological feat that dovetails with what we're talking about. And it's right here in America. It's called Coral Castle. It's located in Coral Gables, Florida. And there's a guy named, he's not alive anymore, Edward Leedsklin. This guy was not even 5 foot tall, they say. Yet he was somehow able to harvest, cut, and hoist over 1,000 tons without any equipment. And he's dead now. I think he built this in the 50s or 60s, I believe. But you can still go see it today. And you'll see these massive blocks. According to neighbors and people in the know back then, he would work on this at night when no one could see him. And neighbors say they could hear him whistling while he built. And you can see photos of this contraption. It was a tripod with like a magnetic box at the top and a magnetic crank at the bottom. So it's like he was using magnetics. And when someone asked him how he built this, he basically said, I'm paraphrasing, I've discovered how the pyramids were built. And that's how I'm able to do this. And most likely it was some type of sound or electromagnetic energy to lift heavy stone as if it was like lighter than a feather. And it's just crazy to think about, but that's something that listeners can go Google or watch on YouTube. Lots of great videos about it. I want to do a feature on it soon too, but that's kind of a modern day example of an anomaly we have. How did a 5 foot tall guy do this without any major earth movers, tractors, cranes, right?
Yeah. So now that you mentioned him, I remember hearing about this, but what you just said about the, how'd you say it? How did he say he moved it, or they theorized how he moved it with sound?
Right. Yeah. He would be heard whistling while he built this at night in the dark. And again, when asked, how did you do this? How humanly possibly did you do this? He said he discovered the secrets of how the pyramids were built, and that allowed him to do this.
Wow. Okay. So I remember hearing about this guy, and I remember feeling like he discovered a new way to use pulleys. I didn't realize that it was more advanced than pulleys, but it kind of goes right along with what they're talking about today. Did he say, or was there a reason why he didn't want to release the information, or was he scared for his life? I mean, I would probably be scared for my life.
You know, I really haven't researched it enough to get those answers. Again, it was really shrouded in mystery, and it's you know, in the alternative history world, it's really one of the great mysteries we've got, kind of, again, modern day. He never came out and said, this is how I did it. It was real secretive. Again, he mentioned the pyramids and studying them, and that was what enabled him to construct this. But again, you can go see it today, and it's these, man, just giant stones there in Florida.
Yeah. So I'm sure there's a lot of people that listen to Florida that know exactly what this is. Now, with this idea of rediscovering ancient technology, what we have in these pyramids and all over the world, these pyramids is a baffling, like, it's not the fact that they exist as much as how they came into existence, which is the mystery. You know, 'cause it seems like from watching Graham and other people talk about these things, you know, there's plenty of theories and even complete 100% understanding as to exactly what these places were used for, why they were used. A lot of it, you know, is spiritual, but, the idea of how these came into existence and then all over the world, is there, what do you think? I mean, is there like a, do you think that back 25,000 years ago, when man was supposed to be, you know, just learning how to break a stick in half, there was a technology that was universal, global, that allowed mankind to globally, almost as one unit, be able to make these things. Like, these pyramids are all over the place.
Yeah, I think 12,000 plus years ago, there was this golden age civilization. I don't believe that everybody was able to enjoy or use these technologies that we're going to talk about. It was most likely the elite of the golden age. Kind of like we see today, you know, there seems to be an elite ruling class that is, has the ability to get stuff and technologies that the rest of us can't enjoy. But yeah, I mean, there's evidence that suggests there was an ancient global power grid system that was like in the shape of a, I think it's called a dodecahedron. It's a very complex geometry symbol, which is sliced into sections. And the Giza pyramid represents the center of this grid system. And so magnetic ley lines, when you study these, they have a particular vibrational quality to them that seems to be able to channel energy for all kinds of purposes, including healing purposes, which we'll get into with these, some of these ancient Egyptian temples. Now, it's crazy because Egyptologists, that's those who study Pharaonic Egypt. The Pharaonic dynasties were the Egyptians that ruled about 3000 BC. And so Egyptologists tell us that the Pharaonic dynasties, or the dynastic Egyptians, as I'll call them, again, who lived around 3000 BC, they tell us that they created the pyramids as tombs, right? But unlike the confirmed Egyptian tombs in the Valley of the Kings, which are like 8 hours away from Giza, no hieroglyphs, no mummies, no Egyptian artwork depictions have ever been found on the bare megalithic walls inside the Great Pyramids. And so one of the great revelations I had when I was in Egypt this last February on our tour, when you're climbing through the pyramids, or the Great Pyramid, for example, this thing is not even functional to be climbed through by a human. And so, for instance, there's these steep 300-foot descending passageways, right? And they're not that tall. You have to bend over. And so I have a small backpack on. I'm doubled over going down 300 feet, right? Steep incline. And you're holding on to the rail systems they've put in there in modern times in these wooden stair planks. How would the dynastic Egyptians of 3000 BC climb up and down these, carrying heavy statues, sarcophaguses, right, on their way to a funeral procession? They would slide down it like a water slide on these bare, smooth, slick, megalithic walls. And so that was one of the big takeaways, is that just the functionality of this thing is no way it was made just to be a tomb. So the key is, the word is repurposed. I believe and many other great researchers before me, including our guide in Egypt, Muhammad Ibrahim, who's also an incredibly bright Egyptologist and one of the only Egyptologists to break with the mainstream and say that I believe a megalithic civilization predated the dynastic Egyptians and made the pyramids. So he's really been blacklisted, kind of like Graham Hancock. But it's likely that the dynastic Egyptians came along in 3000 BC, found these megalithic marvels, as I call them, and repurposed them, right? They did bury some of their pharaohs in there as tombs. They did take over these megalithic temples and build on top of it with their sandstone architecture and add their statues. And so that's where it can get confusing, right? Muhammad Ibrahim, he told me this when we were talking last. He said, for example, I think Khufu gets the credit by the mainstream for building the Great Pyramid about 2500 BC. And Muhammad would say Khufu wanted to be buried inside of it to receive the energy of the pyramid, because he thought he could then cross through portals and it was his ticket into the afterlife to explore these other dimensions. So I think that's likely what's going on. And there's so many crazy anomalies and technology we can get just talking about the Great Pyramid, but I don't want to talk too much.
Well, you could talk as much as you want, my friend. The fact that we've progressed past our initial thoughts and understanding of what these things were, it within our lifetime, essentially, it's got to scream that in the grand scheme of time, we're behind on what technology has to offer, but what was at one time here. The mere fact that, like, what you were talking about, how the initial understanding of these slopes and stuff and how it's almost impossible, right? The fact that we've progressed past that to say that's silly, that doesn't make any sense, that should tell us that they were so far beyond our possible understanding how this thing could happen. And part of it, I think, is because we've been traditionally thought to or taught to think that the longer back you go, the stupider the people were. And that's just not, last time you were on the show, you talked about these like scoop marks in the rock. I forget where you were talking about and stuff, but
yeah, the Aswan Quarry.
I haven't been able to stop thinking about it, man. Like, I have that mental image in my head because I looked it up and stuff, and I was just like, how the heck could they have done that? You know, and it's just, to me, it really shows that the technology that they had back then was far superior. But also, what you said on the previous show has really rung with me as well, which is that they viewed technology differently than we do. We look at technology in a much more vicious way. Ooh, what can I do with this? You know, like, who can I right. control? You know, ooh, if I have this, it means they can't something. And it seems like they didn't view technology that way. And it could have been because there was more of a global coordinated effort in a sense. I mean, you're talking about global power grid. Could there have been not like a global society? Maybe there was, but maybe it's just like a global effort together with this technology. I don't know.
Yeah, no, because we see it you see a lot of the same things in Peru, the megalithic walls there. We're talking, it's not a real phrase, but I like to use it, megaton. I mean, 125 ton single blocks at Sacsayhuamán in Peru. And what you're seeing is, you're not even seeing the 12 feet that go underground. So it's earthquake proof, and it's so massive yet so precise you can't fit a hair through it. I mean, this is the kind of technology we can't replicate today. You mentioned the Aswan Quarry. For those who may have not heard that first show, and I recommend maybe you go back and do for context. But
yeah, 472 Peru's megalithic cave of mystery. And when I say it in my head, I hear an echo, megalithic cave of mystery, mystery, mystery.
Yeah. And I shared a pretty crazy story about inside that cave. So definitely go back and listen to that. But yeah, this Aswan Quarry, I like to say it's one of the smoking guns to me of ancient technology that was used, at least in Egypt. It's the world's largest obelisk. laying in this quarry. It's 1,200 tons. And, you know, the naysayers will say, well, this was just, you know, they were chiseling it out with chisels and hammers, and it got a crack, so they stopped using it. No, you get up close to this. And yes, the dynastic Egyptians of 3000 BC were chiseling and hammering in there. But there's two different methods of quarrying. There's that primitive method and the superior method, which is what looks like ice cream scoop marks. You get down around these unfinished obelisks, you see 1 meter wide scoop marks surrounding it all the way around. Okay, so this is one scoop mark after scoop mark after scoop mark, 1 meter. It's like a giant ultrasonic cutting tool is reaching down, going right through this extremely hard granite and scooping out that section. And when you look at the wall that follows the scoop mark up, you see these dark reddish lines, which is like a sign of excessive heat. Again, maybe due to an ultrasonic cutting tool. So that is an incredible piece of evidence of lost to ancient technology. But then I just, you and I were talking about this video I just posted on Instagram of this levitation technology. And I wanted to talk about that because to me, this was really cool. And you can go to my Instagram, Megalithic Marvels, to see this reel. And this is at Esna Temple, which is located near Luxor. So again, this is like 9 or 10 hours south of Giza. So a long ways away. And this temple is dedicated to the Egyptian ram-headed Neter, or god known as Khnum. And this temple is larger than life. I mean, these pillars inside are so massive, it really takes your breath away. But again, going there with your megalithic goggles on and having a guide like Muhammad Ibrahim is key, because he went and took us to this depiction on one of these walls. And what you see is you see this two giant figurines. One is this ram-headed god Khnum on one side, and on the other side is this Egyptian and ancient Egyptian king. And they're both standing on the sides of what looks like this megalithic temple, right? But the temple is miniature compared to them. But as Muhammad points out, the temple that in that picture represents the very temple we're standing in, which is massive, right? Massive temple, larger than life. And but when you look close at the depiction, you see that the temple is not resting on the ground where their feet are. It's, you know, several inches off the ground. And it's also surrounded by what looks like an energy field. And when you look close, you see both of their hands are holding tools that are pointed at this structure. And then the king is shooting this string of beads over his head down into the gate. And it's known as, again, the levitating temple. And so Muhammad, he theorizes that the beads that the king is holding represent an energy field, and that this is depicting the knowledge of this lost technology and giving us a clue, possibly, how they built it. So that was really incredible to take in. And I'm so glad I captured that on video, because it's really been, there's really been a buzz about that. Like, people are excited to learn about how did they possibly, build this stuff and move this stuff. And again, there seems to be a huge connection to sound waves, to resonant frequencies. And I can talk more about that if you want.
Yeah, please. I would like definitely to hear that. Before you get into that though, I want to ask you, and this is more of a personal, thought, I guess, but why do you think that you're talking about a levitating building or levitating structure here? And this is depicted, and I don't know how old this is as far as like how long we've had this, we've been able to see it and stuff, but it seems like a lot of this stuff has been able to been studied for 50, 100 years. And it's only until recently that we're starting to come to this point where we're talking about this other thought process with this stuff. Do you think it's because humanity has advanced far enough with technology on our own that we can start conceiving the idea of this kind of technology, even though maybe it contradicts the fact that in the past they had it when we're supposed to be just dragging our knuckles on the ground?
Great question. It feels to me like overall, like in the world right now, there's a lot of people talking about a fourth turning. It's like there is this mass awakening on all kinds of levels, politically, holistically. Like people are finally waking up to, you know, healthier eating and organic foods and the damage that, you know, a lot of these drugs can do to you. And so it's like there's an awakening, I think, to even ancient history. Again, this Netflix documentary, it's the reason it's so huge, this Ancient Apocalypse documentary that you referenced that Graham Hancock's released with Netflix. I mean, this is huge because, you know, Graham Hancock wrote some books like Fingerprints of the Gods, and Joe Rogan said in that video we referenced that he read that years ago, and he basically became this disciple of Graham Hancock. And so the last several years, he's had Graham Hancock on his podcast, which is, I think, the biggest in the world, right? And so that's really helped what was normally known as alternative history or pseudoscience. I get accused of that a lot, pseudoscience, to now be thought of, well, wait, maybe there's something to this if Joe Rogan's talking about it, right? And now Netflix is not just releasing it on their platform, but it is a flagship series by Netflix. And so this is getting people's attention. And to me, again, that's proof that there is an awakening to these ideas where people are, they're searching for truth, I guess. And I think that's part of the reason I've seen growth with what I do. It's like people are just hungry for this stuff. They're looking for an outlet that's talking about it. I think that's why your podcast is so huge and the stuff you're getting into. People know there's so much more. Even, you know, it seems like atheism is fading and people realize, man, there's a spiritual world that is very real and the ancients talked about it and they want to experience it. They want to understand. And so I think in a nutshell, that's why we're starting to hear about this in the mainstream.
If you're listening to this Gerber Life Guaranteed Life Insurance sponsorship ad, there's a good chance that you're alive. And if you're not, well, this may not be of interest to you. Now, I know what you're thinking. Life insurance? I'm going to live forever. Death is what happens to other people. Well, for the sake of argument, let's assume you're wrong and that someday you won't be listening to podcasts anymore. I know it's not easy to talk about, so I'll do the talking. If you're 50 plus and alive or 50 to 75 in New York, you can apply for Gerber Life Guaranteed Life Insurance with guaranteed acceptance regardless of your health. And since this life insurance is guaranteed, you don't have to get a medical exam. In fact, you don't even have to fill out a health questionnaire. For a free quote, just visit GerberLifeFamily.com. Then when you stop, I mean, if you stop listening to podcasts, your family can use the insurance money to help cover your financial expenses or anything else. Your kids already inherited your ears, allergies, and questionable singing voice. Don't make them inherit your final expenses too. See website for terms and restrictions. A great awakening amongst humanity is it's amazing because what you just described, we're living in it right now, and it's crazy to think about on certain levels, because you have on one hand this great awakening, and then you have this other hand, this seemingly archaic way of living life and doing things that seems to be on its way out, but also clawing and grasping for every last inch of life in our consciousness and understanding. And yes, that does go politically as well. If anybody's thinking, is he hinting? Yes, I'm hinting. But it's really an interesting time to live in right now. I'm fascinated. And this is a curveball for me, because I was never the person that was looking at the past as anything. I never really cared that much, you know. Like I learned about the pyramids. Oh yeah, they're big buildings out in Egypt somewhere. Like I didn't care. And now it seems like everything that I'm looking into points to our past and trying to understand our past. And it's been fascinating. It's been a fascinating ride for me. So I think you said you wanted to get into now I'm drawing a blank. Was it vibrational frequencies or something like that?
Yeah, we can talk about that. And it's interesting, there was a company called the Nippon Corporation from Japan back in, I think, 1978. They basically wanted to prove to the world that they could figure out how the Great Pyramid was built. And so they basically tried to build the Great Pyramid stands almost 500 feet. Well, they tried to build a 60-foot tall miniature version of this using limestone blocks. And all they were doing was just stacking blocks in a triangle, right? Like, it wasn't like the real mechanical Great Pyramid that has passageways and chambers. And they were going to do it using ramps, pulleys, what the mainstream tells us how they built the Great Pyramid, right? Giant workforce, slave labor. And literally within a short amount of time into the project, they just gave up. They couldn't do it. They couldn't even build a 60-foot tall pyramid that just stacked blocks on top of each other with ramps, pulleys, and a workforce. They had to bring in helicopters, cranes, earth movers to do it. And people can search that to really get the details, but it was one of the great fails of modern times of humans today trying to prove how they built it. And the fact that they couldn't even build the 60-foot one was pretty incredible. So the Great Pyramid alone, again, there's so much mystery regarding this. It stands approximately 500 feet tall, composed of 2.5 million multi-ton blocks. And again, mainstream tells us that it was just constructed by this huge workforce, cutting, shaping, moving large limestone blocks into place using sleds or wet sand. I mean, come on. And they tell us that, again, the fourth dynasty pharaoh, Khufu, built it about over a 10 to 20 year period, which concluded about 2500 BC. Well, if you kind of look at some of these estimates about that, it states that the Great Pyramid, if it was constructed over one pharaoh's reign like this, each huge stone would have to be cored, shaped, and moved and set into place every 2 minutes. So kind of shows you the incredible impossibility of that. And then again, back to Graham Hancock, he talks about how we can calculate from its mass that this pyramid weighs about 6 million tons. It's got a footprint of 13 acres, and it's more than 750 feet long each side. But it's not just big, it's precise, and it's locked into the cardinal dimensions of the planet. It's targeted on true north within 3/60 of a degree. So again, it's aligned, and it seems to be aligned with the constellation Orion as well. So there's so much going on. It's a work of stunning artistic achievement, really the work of masters of architecture. For example, there's blocks of stone inside the king's chamber, which is like the Holy of Holies inside the Great Pyramid. These things are 70 tons each. They were raised more than 300 feet above ground. And so the achievement of making it into a high-precision structure like this is unfathomable, because if you make any tiny mistake at the base, by the time you get to the top, it's a mess, right? And so the Journal of Applied Physics, which was it's a pretty big scientific magazine, they released a study a few years ago based off the research of scientists from Germany and Russia, and they concluded that the Great Pyramid can concentrate electromagnetic energy in its internal chambers and under its base. So this is important because it means we've got scientific data that supports the theory that the Great Pyramid was a technology structure of some kind. And again, there's a huge media cover-up. When this report was released, you weren't hearing about it in the mainstream. Many people might have heard about Chris Dunn. He wrote a book called The Giza Power Plant. And sometimes I don't like that phrase, the Giza Power Plant, because your mind can kind of go back to like just a crummy old like electrical plant in your neighborhood. So I don't like that phrase because of the visual you get, but I like his book, and he has a lot of great theories, and he theorizes the Great Pyramid he believes was built to provide a highly technical society with energy. And it was like this holistic energy device harmonically coupled with the earth, where the earth is the power source and the pyramid is basically tapping into it. And so when it resonates with the earth, energy is drawn through it. And so much of it's related to the geology of the stones they used, plus water. And so it's crazy when you start researching this. Thousands of years ago, the Nile appears to have run right up next to the Great Pyramids. And then over 100 feet down under Giza is a massive aquifer. And in some of the pyramids, you can see erosion. And so it appears that water was the source. And when you study acoustics, acoustic harmony was there to probably work on the bonds of water. Stephen Miller theorizes that it was breaking hydrogen down into oxygen. And the water was used to produce the electromagnetic field with the resonance to keep the pyramid humming like a machine. And so each pyramid might have been tuned to a frequency of sound. And every chamber was probably specifically designed and advanced with acoustics to generate specific sound frequencies. And when you're in the Great Pyramid, there is a spot called the antechamber. You go into it right before you enter the so-called king's chamber, which there was no king ever discovered in there. But this antechamber, it looks like you're in a giant machine. It looks space age. I'll send you a photo. I meant to actually send you some photos. I'm kicking myself, so I wanted you to visualize what I was talking about. But this antechamber was the most amazing thing I saw inside the Great Pyramid. It is, you know, extremely hard granite. But these blocks are layered like you're looking at hydraulics inside an engine or something. It's mind-blowing. And again, the crazy thing is, when you look at the archaeological record, the dynastic Egyptians, and I might have mentioned this on your last show, they had copper chisels and hammers. And they might have even had some iron, which is a little harder. But copper and iron are like 3 to 4, maybe 5 on the Mohs scale of hardness. That is the standard when judging how hard a stone is. Like diamond is going to be a 10, right? Copper's down there at 3 or 4, iron maybe 5. We're talking about Aswan rose granite. It's got quartz all inside of it. It's extremely hard. So it's like an 8, maybe 9 on the Mohs scale of hardness, I believe. So the point is, it's way harder than the tools the dynastic Egyptians had. So one, even if they could use blunt force, you know, for a decade to pound away and try to shape granite, they couldn't have done it with precision to where it's mortarless and it looks laser-like cut, right? So again, you see that kind of stuff inside the Great Pyramid, and you just know inside the whole thing reverberates and echoes on frequencies. And it just really gets you thinking about how crazy it is that all of this granite you see inside the Great Pyramid, people just assume, well, they just grabbed these blocks right there on site and started to build this. No, guess what? These blocks come 11 hours away. The only place Aswan rose granite's found is in Aswan, 11 hours away from Giza, by car, I believe. So you not only have the problem of shaping it, creating this, how in the world did they move 70-ton blocks, and we're talking millions of them, 11 hours by car, right?
Yeah, that's what's so fascinating about all this is when you start hearing about all these anomalies, seemingly anomalies for us, and it's hard to comprehend. So you're sitting here and you're talking about the structure of the pyramids and how, you know, the Nile flowing next to the pyramids and then the aquifer, and I'm starting to draw this picture of, okay, so water plays and the power of water and then the energy and then that's creating the sound, and they're harvesting the energy that's created from the sound or vice versa. And I start thinking about all this stuff, and then all of a sudden you're like, and they pulled these things from all the way over here. And we don't know how they did that either. I'm like, well, that, okay. So, cause part of me is like, okay, so it's this one spot and we could just figure this out. But then it's like, well, how do you make that mobile then? Because that, like they were moving all this stuff in and how did they do that as well? Is it possible? Do you think that, this is really futuristic thinking, by the way. Do you think if we ever get to a point where we actually understand what the pyramids were for, truly, how they operated, how they worked, do you think that it's a possibility that we could renovate these structures into operation today? Because, and I ask that because I think it was in the first episode of Graham Hancock's series, what's it called? Ancient Apocalypse. So like in the first episode, I believe it was, or maybe the second episode, it was probably the second, they were in Mexico and they were talking about how there was like three layers of pyramids at this one location. It was like they built on top of them, you know? And it seems like that, I mean, maybe I misunderstood, but it seems like it was over time, like different civilizations built on top of them, understanding there was an importance to them at least. Do you think that the pyramids in Egypt could be reusable at one point?
Boy, that's an intriguing question. Hey, why not? If we were truly open sourcing the technology, and tapping into the geology of how it was used, that could be a possibility. Here's one thing I know for sure. The dynastic Egyptians were 100% trying to do that. And I'm going to give you some proof of that. And so, it's likely, I think that, so you look at the Great Pyramids, you know, there's three of them right there in Giza. Think of them as this holistic, these holistic energy devices that were powering the megalithic temples where the ancients would come for healing and fertility. So if I sent you a picture of, there's a structure called the Valley Temple, or these other temples like the Esna Temple I referenced with the levitation depiction. These are temples, and a lot of them have the same megalithic stonework that's inside the Great Pyramid, except where the pyramid's not functional for a human to be, or some kind of ancient being to be climbing through, these megalithic temples are. And so it's likely that many theorize the pyramid was powering these temples that were designed for healing and fertility. And when you study the dynastic Egyptian writings and their hieroglyphs, they're talking about these were for healing. And so Muhammad Ibrahim, our guide, theorizes that these were possibly connected, kind of like a wireless connection, but using a resonant energy through the ground. And according to him and many other like tour guides, there's massive secret tunnels that are closed off to the public running all over Egypt and all over Giza. He calls them megalithic tunnels. And so were these possibly like some kind of lev train where they were moving stuff? It's crazy to think about. And then you've got the obelisks we can talk about. At Karnak are some of the world's largest obelisks. We talked about the unfinished one, but it's mind-blowing to see the ones that are still standing, like at Karnak. I think Karnak has the largest standing obelisk in the world. Made of rose granite, again, this thing is massive, and it was likely operating like a huge antenna for cosmic rays that could release energy upon, you know, this ancient civilization. So again, we think of power poles and electrical cables, and they're using this holistic type of technology that's tapping into geology, just tapping into nature. And it was just far simple. And again, how they made this stuff was simple. But then you look at the hieroglyphs themselves up close, and you see evidence of ancient technology. On our last show, did I talk to you about a site called the Ram Museum and the megalithic statues?
That doesn't ring a bell, but that doesn't say much for me.
Okay. Well, this to me was one of the greatest surprises on my trip last in Egypt this last February. I knew that going there, the pyramids were not created by the dynastic Egyptians. They were megalithic, and I knew there was megalithic temples in Egypt. But I assumed that most of the statues you see in Egypt were all dynastic, right? Again, made by the dynastic Egyptians of 3000 BC. King Tut, Khufu, those kind of guys. So you go to this site called the Ramesseum in Luxor, and it's dedicated to Ramses II, who ruled about 1300 BC. And they call this site, that they've dedicated to Ramses II, again, a dynastic ruler, because guess what? The name Ramses was found at this temple. But here's the question. What if this is talking about more than one Ramses? What if this was the original Ramses? Follow? And so you walk around the site, and it's massive, and you see, you know, mostly these sandstone pillars, which is much softer than granite, right? You see these sandstone walls. You see these sandstone statues. They're all built in sections, like there's a leg section, a waist, a head and torso section. These are dynastic statues made with sandstone, much softer than granite, but that's the best they could do. Makes sense? And it's about 20 feet high, made in sections. Then you go around the corner and you see a megalithic statue. This thing is severely damaged. When it was first made, it probably weighed 2 tons, but the head, torso, and waist that you see now is 1,000 tons. You get up close to this, and guess what you see? Muscle tone. Precision made from one solid piece of granite, and you can still see muscle tone in its arms. And on its shoulder are these, I call them precision deep embedded 3D symbols. Looks like they were cut with a laser machine. And then at the base of this statue that it broke off of, you see these same symbols. Well, guess what? Muhammad could read the symbols. They're what people would call hieroglyphs. I theorize this is actually the original language of the megalithic builders. This is likely the original Ramses. Ramses II of the 19th dynasty came along and was so blown away by this, he tagged everything as his. But his construction is far inferior, right, with softer sandstone than this precision granite stuff that, again, looks like it was carved in layers. And Muhammad actually read for us what these symbols said at the base of the statue. And it said, the powerful system of the sun, chosen by the sun, son of the sun, Ramses. And it was incredible when he wrote it. It gave us goosebumps because we realized, okay, there's a whole lot more going on here. It appears that, again, this way predates Ramses II of the 19th dynasty. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. It kind of confirms this idea of degrading of technology over the time. It's so, like, time moves forward, but technology apparently doesn't sometimes. And this was then after whatever, I think Graham talks about the Great Flood. So this was after that catastrophic apocalyptic event that knocked us back to the Stone Age, essentially.
Yeah. Whatever happened, you know, which appears to be around 12,000 years ago, Graham really believes in this Younger Dryas impact hypothesis, where this comet broke off and it hit the North American ice sheet. And if you study the science of that, it would have literally sent a catastrophic flood all over the Earth. And it would have ushered in the Ice Age. And so, to me, that really has a lot of parallels with the biblical flood too. And so either way, there was, I believe, 100% an ancient cataclysm that wiped out this lost knowledge of the Golden Age or the Golden Race. And so the dynastic Egyptians, again, 3000 BC, they were a lot closer to that than we are today. So they still had the fragments of this lost knowledge, right? And that's why they would write about it and talk about it in their dynastic times. And that's why they were repurposing these temples and the pyramids, because a lot of this energy was still flowing out of them back in the day. And actually, when you go to all these sites I'm talking about, you'll see these mud brick walls. And the dynastic Egyptians had built these mud brick walls to surround all of these temples. And when you start studying, again, the geology of like a lot of this, mud bricks has like 62 minerals. So it plays as an energy insulator. They were trying to insulate the energy inside to use it and to protect it.
Wow.
And again, when you look at sandstone, it's formed under oceans. It contains sand and salt. It absorbs negative energies. And so it's used in sites to balance high energy. Quartzite, higher quality than sandstone. It's like crystal. It recharges positive energy. Limestone, they use that a lot on the outside of the Great Pyramid. Highly conductive. It absorbs pollution, plays like an electrical current for granite. That's why there's granite underneath it, inside of it, right? Granite from Aswan is basically, they call it radioactive stone, and it can like send and receive waves. And so again, geology is such a huge part of this. And that's why they were building these mud brick walls around to insulate the energy and try to save it. Because even in their day, they were coming there for healing, fertility, and trying to repurpose a lot of it.
That's incredible. That's incredible. I really hope that the next 3 months goes by smoothly. And this this information drop. Imagine, like, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure you had thought about it, but like, if you just sit back and think, like, if that is a success and that info drop is successful, who's to, like, who knows where we're at in 20 years from now, technology wise? I mean, imagine. So it's 2022, and I always use this example. Back in the early 2000s, just say 20 years ago, how far we've grown in technology. Well, imagine if there's an info drop that kind of put like just nukes, like gives us the power of a nuke behind it and just shoots us forward. I mean, I really hope that it happens and it allows us to understand the past better, but also I'm really hopeful that some way, somehow this technology could really solve a lot of our issues that we have on a global scale. I can't even fathom it. I can't even imagine what that even looks like. But the idea that maybe through this technology dump, just this nonsense between countries can just kind of come to an end, and just and we can kind of live a little bit more at peace. I really kind of hope so, because you know I'm a father of a little kids, and I'm over here trying to raise them, and they're like, you can be anything you want to be in this world. I'm like, if we're still here, sucker, you know?
Right.
You know,
I should talk about the Sphinx before I forget, because to me, when we're talking about dating and cataclysm, and, you know, some people hear 12,000 BC and it really short circuits their mind. Especially if they're coming in for like a, you know, young earth paradigm. Robert Schock, who's a geologist, scientist, I believe too, done some incredible work on the Sphinx. And he talks about how, according to, again, standard Egyptological thinking, the Great Sphinx was just carved from the limestone bedrock on the orders of the old kingdom of Pharaoh Khafre around, again, 2500 BC. When you look at the Sphinx though, on its body and on the walls that it's of the Sphinx is enclosure, you see this massive, heavy erosional evidence. And he concluded it could have only been caused by rainfall or water runoff. Obviously, the Sphinx sits on the edge of the Sahara, and it's been arid for 5,000 years. Furthermore, various structures securely dated to the Old Kingdom show only erosion that was caused by wind and sand, very distinct from water erosion. And so he came to the conclusion that the oldest portions of the Great Sphinx, what he refers to the core body, must date back to an earlier period. And his latest research now points, guess what, to the end of the last ice age, 10,000 BC, a time when the climate was very different and included more rain. And many people have said that, well, the Great Sphinx can't be that old, in part because its head is a dynastic pharaoh head, right? But if you look close, especially look at a drone shot from above, you'll see that the head is tiny compared to the body. And it's clear the current head is not the original head. The original head would have become severely weathered and eroded. Again, the key word is repurposed. The dynastics came along and recarved it, and it became naturally smaller. And Schock also pointed out, and I'd never heard this till a couple months ago. This was mind-blowing. There's hieroglyphs dated around 3000 BC that talk about the Sphinx as a lioness called Mahid or Mahed. And this lioness guarded the royal archive. So 3100 BC, when the dynastic Egyptians are referring to it being, they're referring to it being very ancient already if you read the whole context of this. So again, this corroborates that the Sphinx goes back to a much earlier period. And Dr. Robert Schock even found what he calls a secret chamber underneath, I believe it's right paw. He was never given access to go down there or even put cameras down there to show us. But again, Egyptology, they know a lot of this, but they won't talk about it, show it, or admit it. But the key I share that is this, I believe, corroborates that a lot of these structures in Egypt are much older than we've been told, A. And B, like in the Sphinx, we've got this statue, this creature that I believe represents, you know, a golden age hybrid of some sort, right? And again, it was likely this lioness. And so that gives even an even stronger case of these megalithic statues I talk about. So the ancients weren't just building these structures. I mean, they were artistic. They were creating. They left behind depictions for us to see. The key is the dynastic Egyptians were emulating them. So those symbols I talked about at the Ramesseum, I believe, were part of the lost original ancient Egyptian language. And the current dynastics incorporated those into their modern day language. That's also why they dressed the way they did and depicted the way they did. Because when you look at these statues at the Ramesseum, and there's also one at Karnak, it's the waist down. Again, you see muscle tone in the thighs, pure granite. These are megalithic. Muhammad took us to the Egyptian Museum. There was a statue there. He said, look at the feet. Again, this is rose granite, some of the hardest material on earth. It had precision carved toes, like all the way between the toes, right? When you get up close and you look, you can see the most finite, looks like ultrasonic evidence of cutting all along it, like it was machine cut. Mind-blowing stuff. I've said a lot, but I had to get that out.
No, I appreciate it. With the Sphinx, now, I'm assuming they don't want to even go down this road and acknowledge it, because the I don't know who it is, like the Egyptian Historical Society, they want to be perceived historically as superior, you know, and that's the image that they have right now. Not that they came in and repurposed structures that already existed. Speaking of the ancient Egyptian Historical Society, I wonder if there was a historical society back then was like, you can't cover this up. This is part of history. And they're like, we're going to do it anyways. You know, just like today where it's just like, you can't touch certain buildings. It's history. But it's really interesting. Now, I forget the guy's name that you mentioned about discovering the chamber underneath, I think you said the right paw. Did anybody ever get into that chamber, or is that just quote unquote unacknowledged history?
Well, you know what's crazy? There's some photos you can find of the lead Egyptologist of today. I'm blanking. It's Zawi Hawass, I think. Again, he's considered like the top Egyptologist that runs everything. There's photos of him going inside secret entrances on the Sphinx's back. So there appears to be a couple secret entrances. There's also a hole in the top of the Sphinx head. There's a painting from the, I believe it's the early 1800s of an explorer visiting the Sphinx, and they drew, a depiction of what they saw, and there was someone coming out of its head. Well, if you look at aerial shots, you'll see this massive hole in the Sphinx's head that's like plugged. And again, then there's this, according to Robert Schock, this chamber under its paw, which is like, he says, probably this lost library, a royal library. And then, again, there is an entrance on its back that we've seen that lead Egyptologist going down to in a photo. But again, that won't be released to the mainstream. You have to search to find that. So many enigmas, so many anomalies, but there's definitely a whole lot more going on than we've been led to believe. Have I talked to you about the Serapeum? Do we have any time left?
Yeah, we got plenty of time left. Go ahead.
So this was one of the most fascinating sites in Egypt. If you Google the Serapeum, you'll see these. Basically, this site is a labyrinth. It was discovered in 1850, rediscovered, I should say. And it hides 25 granite black boxes crafted, again, with laser-like precision. Each box weighs approximately 70 tons. It's got a lid of 30 tons. They're cut from the same piece of granite. Each box is found empty, and their purpose really remains a mystery. But it's estimated that these 100-ton boxes would need at least 2,000 men to transport them, right? Again, if you're thinking through the mainstream explanation of this. However, when you go visit the Serapeum, you realize the tunnels that these things sit in are like 2 feet wider than the boxes themselves. How would there have been enough space for a vast army to transport and lower these boxes? It's impossible. Plus, the stone was quarried about 500 miles away. And so the official statement from Egyptologists is that these boxes were made during the dynastic period as burial places for sacred bowls. But again, how could they have precision crafted these with their softer copper tools? And also, it would have been pitch black in there. They would have had to have massive torches for light. There's no black soot on the ceilings. On three of them, you do see some what you would call dynastic Egyptian hieroglyphs. But it's funny, you look at the biggest box, the most famous one that's got these hieroglyphs etched all over it. I believe it's really graffiti, because you look at the hieroglyphs and it's just really crude. It's like it was scratched into this almost mirror smooth like finish. I mean, it shines. And so these boxes, other than, you know, these hieroglyphs are almost, some of them in pristine shape. It's mostly because they were buried forever under the sands of time. But these are incredible to see. You can go see pictures of this on my Instagram. It's one of the pinned posts I've got. And it looks out of this world.
It really does. I remember seeing, I think it's a reel, right? Yeah, you made it a reel, yeah. Because I remember watching it over and over again. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. And what's really like the smoking gun in all of this is that it seems like people can't get past is the fact that we weren't supposed to have we didn't have the tools for this. With it's like trying to carve a wooden goose out of a marshmallow, you know, or using a marshmallow to carve a wooden goose, you know, and it doesn't work. Really interesting stuff. I just remembered that I'm going to actually be meeting you in February, right? Here in Tennessee. You're coming down. Aren't you speaking at
That's
the,
right.
Yeah, we're both guests at BlurryCon with the Blurry Creature Boys.
BlurryCon.
Yeah. Yeah. So I didn't think about that until just now. So, I mean, you're going to be there and there's going to be a bunch of other people like Timothy Alberino and Dr. Laura Sanger and things. So, yeah, I mean, and I think that thing sold out right away, didn't it? I mean, there's no more tickets left, right?
It sounds like it sold out literally within a couple of days. And that was just to their like subscribers. It didn't even hit the public. So I'm super excited to meet you, Tony, and just to meet the Blurry guys for sure. And I think it's going to be amazing. Sounds like we might do some stuff together, so I can't wait.
Yeah, it's going to be a big old party. Too bad people listening right now, they're going to miss it. unless they're members over at Blurry Creatures. I mean, then maybe they got in on the action. But
there you go. Then they got this inside scoop.
Yeah. Yeah, buddy. It's going to be a lot of fun, though. And before we get out of here, Derek, let the people know again one more time where they can find all your stuff.
Yeah, follow me on Instagram at Megalithic Marvels. I'm on TikTok as well, Facebook, all the things, YouTube. And yeah, megalithicmarvels.com is kind of the blog where we've got more articles there. So having lots of fun, would love to connect. And yeah, I'm just excited that we're living in a time where there does seem to be this awakening, man, where we're kind of hitting the mainstream, pushing back on the mainstream narrative and getting to the truth of our past, which I think affects our future. So exciting times.
Well, that's the show, everybody. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you did enjoy it, please share the show with your friends. I don't care where or how you share the show. Just share the show if you enjoyed it. That's the best thing you can do to help the show grow. Share the show. All right, friends, until next week, stay safe, take care, and remember, the truth will set you free, but first it'll piss you off. Bye.
push me down and I'll go higher. Push me down and I'll go higher. Push me down and I'll go higher.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.